Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, June 23rd. Battle brews to top teacher pay in West Texas. MISD says district will continue to offer the highest teacher pay package in West Texas. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Don't look now, but there is a battle between Midland ISD and Ector County ISD, Odessa, when it comes to teacher pay. On Wednesday, Midland ISD Chief of Human Capital Management, Woodrow Bailey, stated in a press release, quote, MISD will continue to offer the highest teacher pay package in West Texas. Providing competitive compensation is critical as we work tirelessly to recruit and retain the top teaching talent for our students, end quote. The comment came the morning after Ector County ISD board members voted to raise their starting teacher salary to $58,750, which is $250 greater than MISD's starting salary. Midland ISD also reported that included in the district's budget proposal are a $1,000 annual incentive bonus for all employees, quote, therefore, a beginning teacher in MISD will earn at least $59,500 next year, 100% employer-funded health insurance plan that, quote, secures the district's total compensation package as the most attractive in the area, end quote. Teachers appear to be the big winner in the race between Midland ISD and Ector County ISD to a $60,000 a year starting salary for teachers. As recently as the 2009-2010 school year, the starting salary for an MISD teacher was $40,900. MISD also noted that starting teacher pay has increased nearly 10% since the 2019-2020 school year, when starting teacher pay was $53,500. In Ector County, the starting teacher salary was $44,500 in 2017-2018. ECISD also has raised its minimum wage for other staff to $15 an hour. Midland ISD's minimum hourly rate increased this year to $13.50 an hour. Quote, in the face of rising costs for all families, this board understands the importance of responsibly supporting the hardworking staff of Midland ISD, said MISD Board President Brian Murray in a press release. Quote, from teaching our students to maintaining our buildings, each of them plays a critical role in the success of our district, end quote. ECISD benefits from a higher maintenance and operations tax rate because of a tax ratification election passed by its residents. Midland ISD's total tax rate is 0.91 cents per $100 valuation. ECISD's total tax rate is $1.17. A history of Midland ISD starting pay for teachers, 2009-2010, $40,900, 2010-2011, $42,000, 2011-2012, $42,400, 2012-2013, $45,000, 2013-2014, $47,000. 2014-2015, $48,000. 2015-2016, $49,050. 2016-2017, $49,050. 2017-2018, $49,050. 2018-2019, $50,000. 2019-2020, $53,500. 2020-2021, $56,500. 2021-2022, $57,500. 2022-2023, $58,500. Housing costs hit new highs for area. Texas A&M report says median home price hits $329,950 in May for Midland. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The median price of a home in Midland County sold in May for a record $329,950, according to the Texas A&M University Real Estate Center. A&M reported the median price in May broke the previous high mark, $325,000, set in January and March of this year. The average price of a home sold in Midland was $367,135, the third highest average since statistics were first reported in 2011. The month shows that the housing market has reached another level in Midland County. First, the median price of a home sold was $62,500 more than the next highest price in West Texas. Second, May marked the fifth month since November that the median price for a home sold in Midland County topped $320,000. Prior to November, the median price had reached $320,000 once, according to A&M. Third, the total dollar volume of homes in Midland County topped $100 million for the third straight month, a first, according to A&M. May also was the 12th straight month that the median price for a home sold topped $300,000. The average price for a home sold in Midland County has topped $300,000 for 45 straight months, a streak that goes back September 2018. A rising median price is something happening in many areas across the state. The median prices in May included $659,000 in Travis County, $578,516 in Collin County, $400,000 in Dallas County, $377,992 in Tarrant County, $326,000 in Harris County, and $321,700 in Bear County. The median price for a home sold in Ector County during the month of May was $249,000, which was tied for second all-time. A&M also reported a total dollar volume of $49.6 million, which was less than half of Midland's total. The months of inventory was 2.8. Other information from the May 2022 report included 277 homes sold, which was level with the 265 homes sold in May 2021, 567 homes on the market at the end of the month, the highest total in 2022, 2.2 months of inventory, which was lower than the 2.8 months 1 year ago, but higher than most larger population counties across West Texas, and larger than the largest metropolitan centers in the state.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, June 23rd, 2022. Community calendar. Events. Movies in the Park with Basin PBS. Finding Nemo. 8:30 p.m. at Centennial Park. MCT's Summer Mummers, Friday and Saturday, July 1st and 2nd, 8th and 9th, 15th and 16th, 22nd and 23rd, and 29th and 30th at the Yucca Theater. Midland Classic Theater Company presents Othello, Saturday and Sunday, and then Friday through Sunday at Cole Amphitheater, 2000 West Wadley. Online, midlandclassictheatercompany.org. Keys for Hope Fundraiser, 6 p.m. Friday at the Petroleum Club of Midland. Summer Sunday Lawn Concert Series, The Croakin' Toads, Sunday at the Museum of the Southwest. Rockhounds post-game fireworks, July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at Momentum Bank Ballpark. Star-Spangled Salute, July 2nd. Fireworks Fandango, July 2nd, in Odessa. Charlie Crockett, Jukebox Charlie, July 3rd, at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Midland Community Band's Patriotic Concert, 2 p.m., July 4th, at the Wagner and Brown Auditorium on Midland College campus, free. Bill Engvall, July 8th, at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Summer Sunday Lawn Concert Series, Treaty Oak Revival, July 10th, at Museum of the Southwest. Cinema Under the Stars, ocean-themed, July 10th, at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, free. Summer Sunday Lawn Concert Series, Tall City Band, July 17th at Museum of the Southwest. Celebration of the Arts Premiere Party, July 15th at Schaap Center. Gene Watson, July 15th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. The Masked Singer National Tour, July 16th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Celebration of the Arts, July 16th and 17th. Franco Escamilla Tour, Gabby, July 22nd at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Dwight Yoakam, July 23rd at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. 2022 Star Spangled Salute, presented by Pioneer Natural Resources. Saturday, July 2nd, downtown Midland. Free admission. Fireworks, live music, children's parade, family fun zone, food and local vendors, beer garden, Oh Snap photo contest. On the net, www.4thinmidland.com. Clift Family of Artists on display at Museum of the Southwest by Audrey Grimes. We each experience the world in our own way. We see and interpret our present through the lens of our past, and no two people have quite the same history. The ways in which we interact with our surroundings are therefore entirely our own. How then, when we are brimming with thoughts and ideas about the world around us, do we communicate them? How do we share our worlds with one another? For the Clift family, art has become a common language. William Clift is a professional photographer who renders both sweeping landscapes and intimate Polaroids with the same ethereal quality. His daughter, Carola, and his son, Will, are artists by trade as well. Carola works in a variety of visual mediums. Her photographs, charcoals, and paintings are coursing with strong emotive gesture. Will is a sculptor with a background in engineering whose gracefully curving creations balance indefinitely in a moment just before the fall. William's wife, Vida Clift, and their eldest daughter, Charis, are not artists in a professional sense. However, both express themselves through artistic means. Vida cultivates her garden to nurture plants and her home to nurture creativity. Charis takes striking photographs of things that catch her eye in her daily life, which she shares with the people she loves. Between the five of them, the Clifts have carried on a visual conversation for decades. When Will was little, He built teetering cantilever sculptures from bits of wood. He usually knocked them down until one day William came along and glued one together, demonstrating without words the value he placed in his son's creative expression. When Carola and William were commissioned to photograph the David and Gladys Wright house, they worked in tandem while maintaining their unique perspectives. Between the two of them, they captured their subject in richer, more rounded detail than one artist could working alone. So the conversation continues, and now we have the chance to join in. For the first time, all five members of the Clift family are represented in one exhibition, A Particular World, at the Museum of the Southwest. Wandering the gallery, we notice repeating motifs between the artists and throughout their early and later works. We see Carola's swooping charcoal lines echoed in the arc of Will's sculptures, and recognize an appreciation for shape and contrast in both Charis and William's photographs. Meanwhile, Vita's love of flowers and color springs up everywhere. Overall, their collective work has a family resemblance, and yet each artist contributes something distinct to the ongoing dialogue. A Particular World, the Clift Family of Artists, is on display at the Museum of the Southwest through August 7th. Gun and Blade Show. The Odessa Gun Show at the Ector County Coliseum Building G, June 25th and 26th, Saturday 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Sunday 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Admission, $8 for adults under 12, free. Two-day passes, $14. Cash only. Info at silverspurtradeshows.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, June 23rd. Dennis Jones appointed to ECISD board. Board adopts budget during meeting on Tuesday. Odessan Dennis Jones was appointed to the District 7 ECISD board spot during Tuesday's board meeting and will be sworn in August. Superintendent Scott Murray said, while he takes the oath of office in August, July will be spent orienting him to the panel. He will replace Nelson Minyard, who resigned in January. Jones, who lived and worked in Odessa for 17 years as a prosecutor, judge, and now a private practice lawyer, while working as a municipal judge for the city of Odessa, he was actively involved in the truancy program for 13 years. He also has previous teaching experience at Angelina College and Odessa College, the recap said. Board member Carol Gregg said the selection of a board member was very difficult. The board met during a special meeting Monday to deliberate candidates. She added that they were excited that so many people were interested and the candidates were very good. Along with Jones, candidates included Randy Adams, James Drexler, Tony Hardesty, Travis Overton, John Ravenalt, David Seville, and Robert Thayer. I'm very honored to even be considered, more honored to get the appointment, Jones said after the meeting. I look forward to working on behalf of our students to increase our accountability, to increase our grades, to get us up to where we need to be. And I look forward to working with the board and the superintendent to attain those goals. In other business, the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees adopted a general fund budget of $338,720,000 for 2022-23 during their meeting Tuesday. Last year, the budget was $325,511,000 $770. The total tax rate is anticipated to remain the same at $1.17792 per $100 valuation. The tax rate won't be adopted until September, Chief Financial Officer Deborah Ottmers said. No one attended to give public comment. A school board in Texas is legally required to approve three separate budgets: the general fund budget, which is projected to be $338,720,000, the debt service budget, projected at $27,547,576, and the school nutrition budget at $18,115,065. All are balanced budgets, the board recap said. Highlights of the general fund budget come from the 2022-23 compensation plan, which trustees approved last month. Starting teacher salary raised to $58,750. In 2017-18, ECISD's starting teacher salary was $44,500, the recap said. Everyone on the teacher pay scale will get a minimum increase of $2,000. 4% general pay increase at midpoint for hourly employees, campus-based and central office. 3% of midpoint pay increase for all professional employees, campus-based and central office. Raise minimum wage to $15 per hour. This is up from $10 per hour 2 years ago. The pay increases come at a cost of approximately $9.3 million to the district's budget, the recap said. During the discussion, it was noted the two largest expenditures by function are instruction, which is 60% of the general fund budget, and maintenance and operations, which is 10% of the general fund budget. The projected number of students is $33,500. They are served in 44 schools. The board also approved William Eicher for principal of Jordan Elementary School. He has been an assistant principal at Bonham and Wilson and Young Medal of Honor Middle School previously, Chief Communications Officer Mike Adkins said. The recap said he taught for 5 years at Ector Middle School, where he was also the athletic coordinator. In addition to his education background, he has 20 years of military experience in the United States Army. Trustees also approved an application amendment to an agreement for limitation on appraised value between the district and 1.5 P1 LLC. The basic premise of it is we approved this application last year. This is the same company that is trying to get 6 more applications through, and part of the properties overlapped. This amendment is just fixing it so the properties all have their own separate boundaries, Ottmers said. Trustees received a report on STAR and end-of-course exam results. Superintendent Scott Murray presented a look at grade-level results compared to last year's scores. In 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade, math scores improved in 8 of 9 areas. Each grade level is measured in 3 ways. Approaches: meet the masters with a high of 10-point increase. In 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade, reading language arts, RLA, improved in all 9 areas, a couple of them by as much as 17 to 18 points, the recap said. 5th grade and 8th grade science increased in all measures. 6th, 7th, and 8th grade math saw double-digit gains in many areas and as much as a 16-point increase in 8 of 9 increasing. Middle school reading language arts went up in all 9 areas, with solid gains at 14 and 16 points. Overall, middle school results were strong, the presentation detailed. 8th grade social studies decreased by a couple of points. Several high school scores did not show the same growth. English 1 was down 2 points, English 2 down 1 point, and U.S. history showed the same results. However, Algebra 1 and Biology increased in all 3 measures. Mary showed the presentation with a slide showing that scores for middle school reading language arts had recovered and even surpassed the results shown in 2019 before the pandemic began. He told trustees he was exceptionally proud of the district's 4,200 employees who made this improvement happen. He said teachers and principals are exhausted from their efforts, and he called the students resilient. He did not have state results to compare ECISD results to. In other business, the board voted 5-0 to approve a resolution to calculate the property tax rate. This is a new state requirement for a school district to name a position to work directly with the local appraisal district on calculation of property taxes. As has been the practice, that position is the chief financial officer. Trustees voted 5-0 to approve purchases over $50,000. The list this month included roof removal and replacement for Odessa High School, professional development services targeted to leadership development, virtual speech therapy for approximately 400 qualifying students, insurance coverage through the TASB, Texas Association of School Boards, Risk Fund, College Career and Military Readiness Supports, and Technology Infrastructure and Systems Projects. ECISD leads active shooter training. The Ector County ISD Police Department conducted a solo officer response active shooter training with multiple agencies Wednesday at the Whitaker Building. The building is used for Odessa High School classes, but it was vacant Wednesday. Training is conducted at various locations throughout the district. ECISD led the training yesterday. What we're looking at is in an active shooter event, there's always a first officer on scene, and the training that they're getting here today helps prepare these officers to address that event for themselves, Assistant ECISD Police Chief Jeff Daniels said. In Ector County, they have been practicing solo officer response for about 4 years now, but active shooter training has gone on for about 20 years. It's nothing new to our country. It's kind of changed from the beginning stages of what you see with the alert training. Instead of waiting for a team to show up to go in and address the situation, it's now up to that single officer that gets to the scene first, Daniels said. We do this every summer, and we do it throughout the school year. Training in this area is something that we're quite proficient and we stay proficient in, the agencies that operate within Ector County as well. We all operate together and train together. For our area, I think we're very well prepared for what has come and what will come in the future, Daniels added. There are certified alert instructors who work for the various police departments, Daniels said. Each agency usually has a few on staff. ECISD has about 8 certified alert instructors, and they are incorporated as the class teachers. They bring in the officers, they conduct the training, they do the observation of the officer, and then they help critique areas of improvement or things they did right and some things they did wrong and try to address those needs, Daniels said. As time passes, during the drill, more officers arrive on the scene. That's where you'll see these teams link up and enter buildings as a team, but before that even takes place, you've got officers who are responding by themselves, Daniels said. Officers also train on timing and communication to make sure everyone is on the same page. It evolves. So there will be the first officer, and then they'll link up with the second arriving officer, up to a third or fourth at the time. We practice their communication between each other, how they're dealing with each other, how they're dealing with a problem inside as a team, as well as the information they're sending out to responding officers. So we're putting the maximum effort of the forces that are arriving to assist in the right places, Daniels said. 12 officers, including instructors, took part in Wednesday's exercise. There were officers from the ECISD Police, Medical Center Hospital, University of Texas Permian Basin, and Texas Department of Public Safety. Daniel said ECISD led the training. The officers had breaching tools and shields, and they used guns with simmunition. He said the mass shooting at an elementary school in Uvalde brings light to what is needed, and more training is needed. You never can train enough, and Uvalde is a very unfortunate incident, but it's just one of those incidents that brings light to law enforcement, and how can we prepare better to respond to emergencies like that? You're always revamping your policies and looking at your training and seeing what can we do. What can we do better, and can we do it more often, Daniels said. For ECISD, multi-agency training is held 4 to 5 times a year, typically in the summer, when they have access to the campuses without interrupting the learning environment. At minimum, ECISD officers get active shooter training 4 times a year, Daniels said. If we can get one in during the school year, we do. For ECISD officers, it's 2 or 3 times throughout the summer as a part of this class, as well on top of what we're doing throughout the school year on campus, Daniels said. Asked if he thought the shooting in Uvalde set law enforcement back a decade, Daniels said information about what happened in the South Texas School District is still coming out. I don't really want to address issues that happened there because we don't really know all of the details yet, but I think it just helps our society prepare and understand what preparation is needed for investigation when incidents do take place like this. We've got to get these officers to be out there to do that job. I think that's what it brings light to, is you got to have the equipment and the ability and the training to handle the situation, Daniels said. ECISD has a department with about 27 officers who patrol campuses. We work well with the surrounding agencies, and they also patrol and check on our campuses. We are very fortunate in how much law enforcement we have that's available to our campuses during operational hours, Daniels said. We're in a lot better place than a lot of areas when it comes to that. After the Uvalde shooting, officers from various agencies patrolled or stopped in at campuses here. I think you're going to a lot more law enforcement on campuses from all agencies. It makes it even more of a priority, and the closer it gets to home, that we've got to protect our children, he added. Students and staff on campuses are trained on how to proceed during emergencies, like an active shooter, and those drills are practiced every year. Daniel said they use department staff members as role players to simulate a real-world environment. He played the suspect this time. Daniel said he's done this long enough to know what's coming. We put a padding on where we can. You can't cover everything, but I know that the training is beneficial to help protect our kids, so we're all more than willing to play the suspect in this and take those rounds, Daniels said. He added that they reenacted situations that have already occurred within the training. We changed out role players. We changed out what we wear so they see us one way in one scenario, and the next scenario, we're in something different, doing something else, Daniels said. He noted that there are many different styles of active shooter training, and they make use of simulators at Odessa College and the Odessa Police Department. I think Odessa and Ector County are very well prepared and preparing more and more every day. We're constantly reevaluating how we do things. What else can we bring? What can we do better? And how can we work together? Our agencies have a great working relationship amongst each other, and that's a big benefit in Ector County, Daniels said. ECUD approves $500,000 purchase despite pushback. Board also decreases rate for single-family homes. During Tuesday 3-hour special meeting of the Ector County Utility District, 2 board members said the board was out of compliance during the process of bidding materials. Board members Will Kapoff and Troy Walker both voted no on the second agenda item that read consider and approve bids for purchase of valves, fire hydrants, and other inventory materials for maintenance and repairs of water distribution system. Kapoff and Walker expressed during Tuesday's meeting the board didn't bid materials properly. Kapoff said the board can't get purchase orders before bids. Purchase orders were issued prior to the board meeting, and that's what I believe was the illegal act, Kapoff said during a phone interview on Wednesday afternoon. After a failed motion from Kapoff to table the agenda item, which was seconded by Walker, the board approved 3-2 to purchase the more than $500,000 of materials ECUD claimed emergency use for the materials, but that belief isn't shared by Kapoff or Walker. Stephanie Shaw and Margaret Burton voted yes, while Kapoff and Walker voted no. ECUD President Tommy Irvin broke the tie with yes. After he broke the tie, Irvin said, "I'll ride the heat on this one. There are three of us that believe it was okay," Irvin said. "Could it have been done better? Yes, it could have been done better. As far as being incorrect or illegal, no, I don't believe so, and neither do the other two board members that voted in favor of honoring those purchase orders." The Odessa American spoke with Walker over the phone on Wednesday afternoon about the events that transpired on Tuesday evening. "I'm not a politician. I am not a lawyer. I don't want to look for a loophole," Walker said. "I want to follow the law to the best of my ability and give the citizens of Ector County and the ECUD Water District a fair shake for the money they are having to spend. I feel like we need to be good stewards of the money that is entrusted with us to make sure that we provide the best possible service and the most water to the most people. I know in my heart of hearts that's not being done. In addition to the belief the bids weren't processed properly," Kapoff said, "there isn't room in this year's annual budget for Tuesday's purchase of more than $500,000 of material." Irvin said funds for Tuesday's purchases are in the bank. Mike Gardner, the Ector County Commissioner of Precinct 1, was in attendance as he spoke about ECUD's importance of sticking to its budget regardless of saved funds. "It doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank. I mean, it matters how much money you have in the bank," Gardner said during the meeting. "So far, you guys are concerned. You live by a budget. Whether you want to do it, a budget in your world is not just a guideline to follow, it's what you live by." Gardner also expressed he wants to give ECUSD between $9 to $10 million in ARPA funds for the array of projects it proposed more than a month ago to the Ector County Commissioner's Court. However, he said, Grant Works, which will oversee the use of ARPA funds, won't let a similar bid process take place like it just did. "I, as a commissioner, am not going to go back and pay Uncle Joe Biden back $2 or $3 million because you guys didn't bid the right way," Gardner said during the meeting. ECUD also heard from Chuck Loy and Nick Weaver of GDS Associates via Microsoft Teams about rate changes. The board approved the rate change that would decrease the monthly minimum charge from $75 to $65. GDS Associates projects the revenue impact for the rate change would drop by nearly $500,000. Irvin believes ECUD can make up for the revenue drop with new customers. The new monthly rates would begin August 27th. The board tabled the adoption of a purchased water adjustment clause and water tap fees and other fees and charges in Ector County. The board will continue these discussions during its next scheduled meeting on July 13th. Quick hits west of the Pecos Rodeo. West of the Pecos Rodeo has been scheduled through today at the Buck Jackson Arena, 1556 South Cedar Street, Pecos. The rodeo will include a rodeo parade, bull riding, bareback riding, team roping, PRCA, tie-down roping, barrel race, old-timers reunion, sheriff's posse nightly dance, hide race, wild cow milking, boot scramble, play day series, and more. Visit PecosRodeo.com. Blood drives. Vitalant has scheduled the following blood drives. Today, 1 p.m. to 5 p.m., Kodiak Gas Services, 3110 South County Road, 1180 Midland. Through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., Music City Mall, 4101 East 42nd Street. June 29th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., Western Midstream, 991 County Road, 300 Mentone. June 30th, noon to 5 p.m., Back in Motion Chiropractic, 1113 South Scurry, Big Spring. To make an appointment, visit donorsvitalant.org. Ocean Cubes, Ector County Library Children's Department has scheduled Ocean Cubes for ages 8 through 12 from 3:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. today in the library's basement activity room, 321 West 5th Street. Call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Painting and Pizzas. Keep Odessa Beautiful has scheduled a free painting class and pizzas from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. today at the Household Hazardous Waste, 814 West 42nd Street. Seating is limited. Call 432-335-4686 or visit keepodessabeautiful.org. Free tree class. Commissioner Mike Gardner will present a free tree class with Master Gardener Shirley Kelly at 6 p.m. today at the Ector County Sheriff's Office, Westside Annex, 2261 West Sycamore Drive. Learn the recommended varieties of trees to plant, including when, where, and how best to plant them. Visit tinyurl.com/57CJ7YVT. Western Night, Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Western Night, a family night celebration of the work of Frederick Remington, at 6 p.m. today. Inspired by the current exhibition, Dramatic Moments, by Frederick Remington, which is set to end August 28th. The event is free and open to the public. Visit noelartmuseum.org. Fatal fire may have been suicide. Investigators looking into Tuesday morning's fire in West Odessa have determined the man who died in the fire was trying to commit suicide, said Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths. The sheriff's office received a 911 call around 5:30 a.m. about an RV fire in the 4300 block of Flamingo, and while Odessa fire rescue crews were extinguishing the blaze, they discovered a deceased man roughly 40 years of age inside the RV. A second man was taken to the hospital, suffering from smoke inhalation, and he was treated and released, Griffiths said. When sheriff's office investigators and state fire marshals interviewed the second man, they learned he'd been staying in the RV in the backyard of his parents' house and had invited the deceased man to stay with him. The man told investigators the other man was suicidal and had started several small fires inside the RV using a handheld torch, Griffiths said. The survivor tried to put out the fires with an extinguisher, but ultimately was unable to battle all of them and was forced to evacuate, he said. Investigators were able to corroborate the man's story and recover the fire extinguisher, Griffiths said. The identity of the deceased man is still pending the autopsy, the sheriff said. Marfa man found guilty of meth possession. A federal jury sitting in Pecos convicted a Marfa man last week for possession with intent to distribute methamphetamine, a Department of Justice press release detailed. According to court documents and evidence presented at trial, Stephen Dudley Brunson, 63, was stopped for a traffic violation. Brunson was arrested for Class C offenses, including the license plate and temporary permit displayed on the vehicle he was driving. When Brunson was searched, incident to arrest, several knives and brass knuckles were found on his person, as well as over 27 grams of methamphetamine. A sentencing date has not been scheduled yet. Brunson faces up to 20 years in prison. He has remained in federal custody since his arrest on February 18th. U.S. Attorney Ashley C. Hoff of the Western District of Texas and Drug Enforcement Administration Special Agent in Charge Greg Millard, El Paso office, made the announcement. The DEA and the Texas Department of Public Safety are investigating the case. Assistant U.S. Attorney Amy L. Greenbaum and Sarah Spears are prosecuting the case. Oklahoma man dies in early morning crash. A 31-year-old Oklahoma man was killed in an early morning three-vehicle crash Wednesday on State Highway 302 at FM 866, 11 miles west of Odessa. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Daniel Chaparro Garcia of Laverne, Oklahoma, was traveling south on FM 866 in a Mercury Montego when he failed to stop at a stop sign and pulled out in front of a Kenworth truck, tractor, and trailer hauling oil field equipment east on SH 302. Debris from the ensuing crash then struck a Freightliner truck, tractor, and trailer. The drivers of the truck tractors, a 34-year-old man from Midland and a 33-year-old man from Odessa, were uninjured, but Garcia was pronounced dead at the scene.
Hello, this is Michael. To fill for time, I'll be reading other selected articles from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Thursday, June 23rd. Panel recommends seniors get newer, souped-up flu vaccines, by Mike Stobe, Associated Press medical writer, New York. Americans 65 and older should get newer, souped-up flu vaccines because regular shots don't provide them enough protection, a federal advisory panel said Wednesday. The panel unanimously recommended certain flu vaccines that might offer more or longer protection for seniors whose weakened immune systems don't respond as well to traditional shots. Options include Fluzone High-Dose, Fluad with an immune booster, or Flublock, which is made with insect cells instead of chicken eggs. The panel's recommendations usually are adopted by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and become the government's guidance for U.S. doctors and their patients. This would be the first time the government has stated a flu vaccine preference for older adults. U.S. officials currently say that all Americans 6 months and older should get a flu vaccine every season. Flu shots tend to be less effective than other common vaccinations, but they often have been particularly disappointing in seniors. Health officials say there is persuasive research indicating some of the new shots work better in older adults, especially at preventing flu-related hospitalizations. Studies are limited, though, and there's little research comparing the three new versions. These influenza vaccines are better, but are not yet the home run that we would love to have, said panel member Dr. Helen Kep Talbot of Vanderbilt University. The new shots have caught on. About 80% of Medicare beneficiaries get the souped-up vaccines each year, mostly the high-dose one, officials said. The new versions can cost roughly three times more than standard flu shots, but they are covered by insurance programs. Panel members said seniors should get regular flu shots if the newer ones are not available. Also on Wednesday, CDC officials reported the flu vaccine didn't work all that well this past winter, when most illness was caused by a flu strain that vaccines traditionally do a relatively poor job protecting against. The vaccine was 35% effective in preventing flu symptoms severe enough to require a doctor visit. It was about 44% effective in children and lower in adults. Powell says Fed aims to avoid recession, but says it's possible. The Associated Press, Washington. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell sought Wednesday to reassure the public that the Fed will raise interest rates high and fast enough to quell inflation without tightening credit so much as to throttle the economy and cause a recession. Testifying to the Senate Banking Committee, Powell faced skeptical questions from members of both parties about the Fed's ability to tame inflation, which has surged to the top of Americans' concerns as congressional elections near. Democrats wondered whether the Fed's accelerated rate hikes will succeed in curbing inflation or might instead just tip the economy into a downturn. Several Republicans charged that the Powell Fed had moved too slowly to begin raising rates and now must speed up its hikes. Powell acknowledged that a recession is possible as the Fed pushes borrowing costs steadily higher. "It's certainly a possibility," he said in response to a question from Senator John Tester, a Democrat from Montana. "It's not our intended outcome, but it's certainly a possibility." Powell stressed that the Fed's primary goal is to reduce inflation, but said he still hopes to achieve a soft landing, a reduction in inflation and slowdown in growth without triggering a recession and high unemployment. "We do think it's absolutely essential that we restore price stability, really for the benefit of the labor market as much as anything else," Powell said on the first of 2 days of testimony as part of the Fed's semi-annual report to Congress. He said the pace of future hikes will depend on whether and how quickly inflation starts to decline, something the Fed will assess on a meeting-by-meeting basis. The central bank's accelerating rate increases, it started with a quarter-point hike in its key short-term rate in March, then a half-point increase in May, then three-quarters of a point last week, has alarmed investors and led to sharp declines in the financial markets. Powell's testimony comes exactly a week after the Fed announced its three-quarters of a point increase, its biggest hike in nearly three decades, to a range of 1.5% to 1.75%. With inflation at a 40-year high, the Fed's policymakers also forecast a more accelerated pace of rate hikes this year and next than they had predicted 3 months ago, with its key rate reaching 3.8% by the end of 2023. That would be its highest level in 15 years. Concerns are growing that the Fed will end up tightening credit so much as to cause a recession. This week, Goldman Sachs estimated the likelihood of a recession at 30% over the next year and 48% over the next 2 years. At Wednesday's hearing, Senator Elizabeth Warren, a Democrat from Massachusetts, challenged Powell's rate hike plans and asked whether they would reduce gas or food prices, some of the highest profile drivers of inflation. Powell acknowledged that they wouldn't. Instead, Powell said that higher borrowing costs for things like mortgages, auto loans, and credit cards, resulting directly from the Fed's hikes, can help slow consumer demand and inflation pressures. Yet Warren and other Democrats argued that the Fed's approach carries the risk of weakening the economy and heightening unemployment, even as the war in Ukraine keeps gas and food prices high. Such a dynamic would resemble the dreaded stagflation of the 1970s. "You know what's worse than high inflation with low unemployment?" she asked. "High inflation and a recession with millions of people out of work. I hope you consider that before you drive the U.S. economy off a cliff," Warren added. Here's an article that relates to our previous article from the Midland Reporter-Telegram opinion page, June 23rd. Opinion Extra: "Economy is headed for a hard landing," by Bill Dudley, Bloomberg. If you're still holding out hope that the Federal Reserve will be able to engineer a soft landing in the U.S. economy, abandon it. A recession is inevitable within the next 12 to 18 months. In their latest set of projections, Fed officials laid out a benign scenario in which the economy keeps growing at a moderate pace and unemployment increases only slightly, even as the central bank raises interest rates significantly to get inflation under control. While the Fed's forecasts have become more plausible over time, I see several reasons to expect a much harder landing. First, persistent price increases have forced the Fed to shift its focus from supporting economic activity to pushing inflation back down to its 2% objective. The central bank's employment mandate is now subservient to its inflation mandate. This can be seen both in Chair Jerome Powell's performance at last week's press conference and in the June FOMC statement, which removed language that the labor market would remain strong. Second, the new focus on price stability will be relentless. Fed officials recognize that failing to bring inflation back down would be disastrous. Inflation expectations would likely become unanchored, necessitating an even bigger recession later. From a risk management perspective, better to act now, whatever the cost, in the terms of jobs and growth. Powell does not want to repeat the mistakes of the late 1960s and the 1970s. Third, the current economic expansion is uniquely vulnerable to a sudden stop. In the short term, payroll growth, economic reopening, and healthy balance sheets, supported by the vast fiscal stimulus of 2020 and 2021, should support demand, which in several sectors exceeds supply. For example, the two-year cumulative supply shortage in the motor vehicle sector likely amounts to several million units. As a result, it'll take time and a considerable monetary policy tightening to reduce demand, and for that to translate fully into weaker production of goods and services. But when that time comes, the production adjustment is likely to be abrupt due to tight financial conditions, restrictive fiscal policy, and tapped out household savings. The broad U.S. equity market is down more than 20%. Mortgage rates are up more than 2 percentage points, and the dollar is up about 10% against a broad basket of foreign currencies, constraining U.S. exports. The Hutchins Center at the Brookings Institution estimates that fiscal policy shaved more than 3 percentage points off annualized U.S. economic growth in the first 3 months of 2022, a drag that is expected to persist through 2023. As inflation outstrips wage growth, the personal savings rate has plummeted from 26.6% in March 2021 to 4.4% this April, significantly below its long-run average. No wonder consumer sentiment has fallen to levels last reached in the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis, and Google searches for the word recession are hitting new records. Finally, economic history points to a hard landing. The Fed has never tightened enough to push up the unemployment rate by 0.5 percentage points or more without triggering a recession. According to the SOM rule, when this trigger is reached, the next stop is a deeper slump in which unemployment increases by at least 2 percentage points. Much like Wile E. Coyote heading off a cliff, the U.S. economy has plenty of momentum, but rapidly disappearing support. Falling back to earth will not be a pleasant experience. And now this article from the Odessa American from Thursday, June 23rd. Groundhog Day at IRS. Returns pile up. Phone delays worsen. The Associated Press, Washington. It's Groundhog Day at the IRS. After digging out of a daunting backlog from 2021, the agency has an even bigger backup for this tax season than it did a year ago, and its pace for processing paper returns is slowing down, according to a watchdog report released Wednesday. The National Taxpayer Advocate, an independent watchdog within the IRS, also said taxpayers are experiencing longer wait times on the telephone, and delays in processing paper returns have been running 6 months to 1 year. The report on taxpayer challenges, which must be submitted twice a year to Congress, comes one day after the Internal Revenue Service announced that it is on track to eliminate its 2021 backlog of tax returns this week. The objectives report to Congress contains proposals for lawmakers to consider going forward. When I released my annual report to Congress 6 months ago, I wrote that paper is the IRS's kryptonite, and the agency is still buried in it. National taxpayer advocate Aaron Collins wrote in the report. Fast forward to this objectives report, it's Groundhog Day. She added, at the end of May, the IRS had a larger backlog of paper tax returns than it did a year ago, and its pace of processing paper tax returns was slowing. Collins, who serves as an IRS ombudsman, said of the agency's problems, the math is daunting. According to the report, at the end of May, the agency had a backlog of 21.3 million unprocessed paper tax returns, an increase of 1.3 million over the same time last year. The agency fell short on its goal to bring on 5,473 new employees to process returns, with just 2,056 employees hired. And now here are three related articles published in the Odessa American this Thursday, June 23rd. State Senator Gutierrez sues DPS for not releasing Uvalde records, by Snea Day, the Texas Tribune. State Senator Roland Gutierrez, who represents Uvalde, is suing the Texas Department of Public Safety over records related to the deadly shooting at Robb Elementary last month. In the wake of this senseless tragedy, the people of Uvalde and Texas have demanded answers from their government. To date, they have been met with lies, misstatements, and shifts of blame, Gutierrez said in a lawsuit filed Wednesday. State and local Uvalde officials have fought the release of records that could provide clarity around the botched emergency response to the shooting that killed 19 children and two educators. Law enforcement responding to the shooting waited more than an hour on the scene before breaking into the classroom to kill the shooter. Gutierrez said he filed an open records request on May 31st for documentation about police presence and ballistics at the shooting, and he still has not received a response. Per state law, DPS had 10 business days to either respond or make a case to the Attorney General. Neither Gutierrez nor DPS immediately responded to requests for comment. ProPublica and the Texas Tribune also submitted about 70 public information requests related to emergency response documentation during the shooting, including 911 audio recordings, body and police car camera footage, and communications among local, state, and federal agencies. 4 weeks after the shooting, government officials have not provided the news organizations a single record related to the emergency response. Governor Greg Abbott's office, the Texas Department of Public Safety, the U.S. Marshals Service, and the City of Uvalde have asked the state attorney general for permission to withhold some records. In most cases, the agencies are arguing that releasing information could interfere with ongoing law enforcement investigations. Abbott's office on Tuesday said all information related to the shooting has been shared with the public or is in the expedited process of being released. Full results of the ongoing investigation by the Texas Rangers and the FBI will also be made public, according to the governor's office. Uvalde mayor accuses state of leaking records to make local police look bad, by William Melhado, the Texas Tribune. Uvalde Mayor Don McLaughlin on Tuesday accused state authorities of selectively releasing information about last month's school shooting to scapegoat local law enforcement and intentionally leaving out details about the state's response to the massacre. New details emerged this week about the timeline of the shooting based on surveillance video from the school's hallways and a transcript of officers' body cameras. The records show that officers might not have attempted to open the doors of the classrooms where the gunman had holed up with victims. During a state Senate committee held earlier Tuesday, Texas Department of Public Safety Director Steve McCraw told lawmakers that law enforcement's response to the Uvalde school shooting was an abject failure. McLaughlin lambasted McCraw for what he described as a selective release of information about the investigation, focusing on blaming local law enforcement and leaving out the role of McCraw's agency during the shooting. McCraw has continued to, whether you want to call it lie, leak, mislead, or misstate information, in order to distance his own troopers and Rangers from the response, McLaughlin said Tuesday evening. McLaughlin said none of the entities with information about the investigation into the May 24th shooting at Robb Elementary School, DPS, the Texas Legislature, the Uvalde County District Attorney's Office, and the FBI, have briefed Uvalde city officials about their findings. McLaughlin said he has been asked to refrain from sharing details about the investigation while it was ongoing, but said Tuesday he would now start releasing that information as it became available to city officials. The gloves are off. If we know it, we will share it, he said. Ariana Perez Castells contributed to this story. Uvalde school police chief on leave after mass shooting. The Associated Press, Uvalde. The Uvalde school district's police chief was put on leave Wednesday following allegations that he aired in his response to the mass shooting at Robb Elementary School that left 19 students and two teachers dead. Uvalde Consolidated Independent School District Superintendent Hal Farrell said he put the school's police chief Pete Arredondo on administrative leave and that another officer would assume the embattled chief's duties. In a statement, Harold did not give a reason for removing Arredondo, but said it remains unclear when district officials will know the outcome of the investigation of the shooting. Colonel Stephen McGraw, director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, told a state Senate hearing on Tuesday that Arredondo, the on-site commander, made terrible decisions as the massacre unfolded on May 24th, and that the police response was an abject failure. 3 minutes after 18-year-old Salvador Ramos entered the school, sufficiently armed law enforcement were on scene to stop the gunman, McCraw testified. Yet police officers armed with rifles waited in a school hallway for more than an hour while the gunman carried out the massacre. The classroom door could not be locked from the inside, but there is no indication officers tried to open the door while the gunman was inside, McCraw said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.